Welcome to the D-Shift Podcast, where we provide inspiration, motivation, and education to help you transition from the challenges of divorce to discover the freedom and ability to live life on your own terms. Are you ready? Let's get this shift started. Hello, and welcome to another episode of the D-Shift Podcast. And today we're going to talk all about getting rid of stress and dealing with all of the pressures that come along with going through a divorce and with being a business professional. So I'd like to introduce you to my friend, Ann Greco. Ann and I have known each other for a little bit now, and Ann has a background in mental health counseling, and she helps people to deal with stress so that it doesn't lead to issues like chronic health problems, anxiety, and burnout. So, Ann, welcome. Thank you so much for being here.
Oh, thank you so much for having me, Marty. And one of the things that I wanted to start with, you know, when it comes to relationships, because I do still do some mental health counseling with people in my office, have a couple of couples that I'm treating currently. We talk a lot about relationship dynamics. And of course, these are the foundations for what leads to that experience of having stress and anxiety. And there are a couple of things that are important to know when people are experiencing stress in a relationship. People come into relationships, number one, with whatever history they have. Then they also, number two, come in with a projection, some sort of a projection that it seems like it's on the other person, but it's actually related to them. And then the third thing that they come in with is a filter. It is a way of seeing the world. Now, all of these things are things that happen, and knowing and identifying them, of course, is foundational, and it is the key to be able to improve a relationship, be able to manage stress around being in a relationship. So I just wanted to start the podcast by putting some of that information out there. I thought it might make for good discussion, and you could even ask me some questions about that.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's a really great reminder that a lot, you know, I went through a divorce and I've been through breakups, and I got to tell you, for the first 6 months, it is all their fault. They were the jerk. They were the problem. They were this, they were that. Yeah. There are some situations where yes, one person is an abuser or a narcissist or has some kind of mental health issue where they really are not able to make any changes and they are just destroying the other person. But in most cases, most relationships, there's a little bit of guilt or changes that could have occurred, or blame or whatever word you want to use on how that whole relationship devolved. But let's talk about stress specifically. So, Ann, can you tell us a little bit about your background and kind of what got you into working with individuals and couples, but specifically around this area of stress?
I started out as a technical writer 11 years ago, and I was in the IT industry, which was a very stressful field. And then at some point, I wanted to go back into writing. I wanted to have something to write about and go back to school. So I went into mental health counseling. I went into the counselor education program, and it's a developmental degree that I have. And I got my licensure to be able to practice psychotherapy in 2002. And I've been practicing ever since. That's over 20 years ago. And basically I started to work with all different types of populations, and I started to focus on the people who had some stress and anxiety, obviously. A lot of them had a dual diagnosis. Some of them were court ordered. They were forensic clients who were involved with the Department of Corrections. The other thing that I think had me zero in is that I was talking to people a lot about what stressed them out most related to their career or their relationships. So I naturally came into that. I started to do coaching because a business professional who was traveling asked me if he could jump on the phone with me. He couldn't get into the office. So even before there was such a thing as life coaching, I was working with people over the phone and not in an office. And then I realized that there were a lot of people who really wanted to talk about stress related to a relationship, stress related to work, And then, of course, the personal stress related to, I know you talk a lot about self-care and other kinds of things, you know, just being an individual and how we take care of ourselves. So that's a little bit about my background.
Yeah. So that's really good that you've had that really broad experience. And that's probably the wealth of information you bring when you work with clients. Have you seen stress change over your career in working specifically in the mental health field?
Yes, I think that there are different types of stress that we've identified, different types of fatigue that leads to stress. Probably it starts with stress and then leads into an anxiety or a form of fatigue. So there is a lot of that. There's decision fatigue and there's compassion fatigue, you know, the more we learn about it. I think that also the way we do business and the way we communicate in general is kind of interesting because we have more ways of communicating, more platforms that we communicate on. And I will talk to people sometimes about something that is a pretty deep-rooted or significant issue and then find out later that they did it, all the conversation they had or interaction, the connection with the person was on text or virtual.
Yeah.
Which is interesting. Yeah. About 10 years ago, when I was working with a couple of psychiatrists, I actually saw the first case of a young person, a 20-something-year-old person who met somebody online. They were engaged to be married, but they had never met face-to-face.
Wow.
And then, of course, the relationship had issues and it ended, the other person ended it. And so they were truly heartbroken. And having a heart, you know, I was raised at a time when everybody dated in person.
Sure.
You know, and you wouldn't even call it a relationship until certain stages of the relationship had happened.
Right.
And for that person, though, it was very real. The connection online was real, seeing them, talking to them. And so when that, and I think that that is a stress that is different than it was a while back. People will get very hurt and they will experience a lot of reactions related to, and the, I think it's the younger because they grew up with technology, you know, that we see.
Yeah. And, you know, the whole, and I know this is maybe going a little bit off topic, but this whole online experience where people post something and then, you know, the dopamine that they are measuring, that they're getting the same dopamine hit as they would if they were using, I think it's cocaine, where people see, oh, I got a like, and then that becomes their reward. And they're just like that little hamster just hitting that lever to get those little treats or those little whatever. And then when they get a negative, it's devastating. Like, and there's so many of these people who just go around online. What do they call them? Trolls? They just go around online and just like say hateful, hurtful things to people.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, we had that in a Zoom meeting. I was on a Zoom meeting earlier this week and the people that were on there just came in and they went, "You have autism," to the speaker. "Everybody on this call has autism." And I forget, it wasn't troll. There was another name they called, but they came in and then eventually they exited them. They took them out of the meeting, but they came in and started having a conversation that wasn't related to the, because we're not talking about autism in that meeting.
Right. Yeah. And people just seem so, I do mediation. So I do mediations for a lot of organizations. So I'm going to be careful and not mention any organization here, but I have just seen like civil discourse is just, it's in the toilet right now. I mean, people are so rude. You know, somebody says something and I don't like it, I just scream, "You're a liar," and storm out of the room. And that's not an isolated occurrence anymore. Whereas 30 years when I started that, everybody in the whole room would have gone, "Wow, I can't believe that happened." And now they don't. I mean, it's just like, oh, that's just something normal. So this is all the kinds of stress we're dealing with. Or additional kinds of stress we're dealing with. And then there's still the financial, the career, the relationship, the actual physical marriage relationship and all that kind of stuff, or divorce, going through that. What do you see as the leading reason why clients seek you out? Like, do they realize they're under stress, or how did they get to you?
I think it comes from, for me, they can have meet somebody who has worked for me and noticed the shift in their thinking, notice the change and the way that they approach a problem. when they that is what would probably bring them to me specifically, I have found. The other thing is that what brings them in, it has to do with someone else or something else.
Okay.
Like it could be a major thing going on at work or in the relationship that they want to either prevent or they want to make sure they create it within those spaces,
Okay.
or their children. They see something happening with their children that they can say stems from something that they have done or they're doing. Like one example, to be a little more tangible, is that someone interacts with people in such a way and they see one of their daughters, teenage daughters, doing the same thing and going down the same path.
Okay.
And they are concerned that that is going to lead them to a path of isolation.
Sure.
They're priming them for success, and there's no doubt they're going to be very successful, have a very good career, but they're wanting them to get the interpersonal skills and the social skills, especially at a teenage time when social skills are being built.
Yeah.
So when they see the quality, they're wanting to talk to them and they're wanting to make sure that they eliminate the negative thinking or whatever it is that they're noticing that they
Sure.
believe they have been modeling for their child. In other words, that is a prime reason, and probably you hear that a lot as well,
Well, I
you
was
know.
going to say what I hear a lot is I hear a lot of women say, I see my daughter has seen me go through a few relationships where I've married the same guy, not actually the same personality or the same characteristics, and she's seen three failed relationships or two failed relationships. And I want to get better at choosing a better partner. And I want my daughter to not follow in those footsteps. So I hear more of that kind of concern. Like, this is, my second or third relationship failure. And this is all my daughter's knowing is relationships failing. And I don't want her to have that perception. So how do you think stress impacts, and this may be a really basic question, but I think it's important for us all to remember this. How does stress impact our daily lives? Like what becomes different when we're under stress?
One of the things that's important to notice about stress or anxiety is that there is a cycle to it. And so one of the key identifiers is this is called a cycle of avoidance. So when people are avoiding certain things, they're, in other words, they are procrastinating, they are not showing up for things, or they find that there is something that they have to do or they enjoy doing and they're not doing it. What happens is, number one, momentarily it may re reduce the anxiety or the stress in the minute, but then it progresses over time because at some point something has to be talked about, it has to be dealt with, or it has to be taken care of, or at least paid attention to in some way, shape, or form. And that could be self-help, that could be school, that could be even having a conversation in a relationship. So what happens is it progresses over the course of time. And then the other thing that happens is that every time we do that, we're training the brain and we're more likely to do it that way again the next time we're faced with whether it's an acute stress or a chronic stress. And I have seen people both in my office, in the coaching program in general, where it almost looks like a form of depression where they say they cannot get out of the bed. But what is really happening is that there is an avoidance. There's a procrastination related to, and sometimes as a clinician and as a professional, you know this, we have to kind of diagnose and kind of dig in and find out, is it actually depression or is there something related to procrastination that's actually happening? And what happens is that drains the energy. If you've ever had that experience, I think I've had a taste of it. I know a lot of people, and it
Yeah.
just saps whatever energy we have.
Yeah, and I think so I know you work with people on resilience, and that's kind of the opposite of stress, right? And so that is one of the things I work with my clients on. And I just want to really stress here, I am not a clinician. And is, on the other hand, a mental health professional. So I, when I work with my clients, I quite often, you know, if I don't know, you know, I ask them, you know, the general coaching questions, but if I feel that they might benefit from speaking to somebody, I make that recommendation. I mean, it's up to them to choose whether or not they want to seek out some mental health support. But where do you think the biggest stigma is around, especially, let's say, high achieving individuals? And I'm going to talk about women specifically, because that's typically who's going to be listening today. What do you think the biggest stigma still is, which I am so upset at, because there's been so many efforts to stop this? What's the biggest stigma about seeking support if you're dealing with stress or burnout or anxiety?
That there is something gravely wrong happening. That there is something terrible related to looking for support. I have always said, from the very beginning, after I first got my license, the healthiest people come in, whether it's with a coach, whether it's with a therapist, whomever gives them somebody from their pastoral community, sometimes they will use or work with. And they are looking to collaborate. They are looking to connect. They are looking to express themselves. And with expression, outlet, and engagement, that is something that is preventive, and it promotes mental wellness and resilience. And one of the reasons that had me start to do coaching also has to do with this idea, is that I don't want to see the progression. We can prevent the progression by people coming in to talk with somebody so that they don't end up in the psychiatrist's office, because left untreated, it will worsen and it will seem unwieldy.
Yeah.
And with a few tools, it's amazing how people can recapture that feeling of well-being, the sense of wellness, and start to work toward that resilience, that sustainable type of resilience. You know, I just thought that this could be avoided.
Yeah.
You know, I would see people, they had seen the psychiatrist, they were referred from the psychiatrist to me, doing medication, talking to me. And I thought, could that have been avoided had that been happening sooner? You
yeah.
know, or could it at some point actually work out that they could come off of the medication if they desire to do that? And I can't think of anybody that I know. Some people have to take meds, and there is a reason why. And so I'm not denying that. Sometimes there is a reason.
Sure.
Sometimes, though, people can gain confidence in themselves and their ability to manage it. So that's what I would say about that. The biggest stigma is that people may not realize that there is something they can learn about themselves and about things in general. And the other part is they learn from what they hear themselves saying. They learn by being able to talk it out.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's so important. And we all need to make more of an effort. Like, it, you know, it shouldn't be such a big deal to say, hey, I could really use some support right now. And I think sometimes, I'm just going to throw my two cents in. A lot of the women I work with are in, you know, positions where they're upper level C-suite, or they're running their own business. And it's kind of like they feel like, if I have to ask for help, everybody's going to look at me like, I don't know, I can't manage this. And that's not the case. And I really like you saying that the strongest people you know are the people that reached out and got help. So,
yeah. And what we model, what the leaders model, leading with executive resilience, is all about modeling that. It's about, you know, and I had the event that I did recently about emotional regulation. It's the number one issue that people really have, is being able to regulate their emotions,
right?
You know, a lot of times in business. And so yeah, for the group of people that we're talking about, leading is encouragement. You know, it, and one of the ways we encourage and motivate is by the skills that we model for people, that we demonstrate, and then they start to see, oh. And then it actually helps with team building. It actually helps. People have a fear, though. I had somebody who had a medical issue related to anxiety, was seeing the psychiatrist, had to go on medical leave at a call center. He said, I so am going to have trouble. I'm going to lie and say I had a heart attack. And I'm like, why are you going to say you had a heart attack? He goes, because I don't want to go in and tell them I had that. They will think I am weak and they will be like a bunch of wolves, is what he said.
Yeah.
And we had a long conversation, and I didn't tell him what he needed to say when he went back to work. He could, and I actually told him, I don't even know that you really need to say anything.
Right.
Just that you're back.
Yeah.
And that it's about them. The work is about the team and them and the numbers.
Yeah.
You know, like meaning, can you guide them with a powerful conversation, you know, and direct them into the point of why you're there. They're not there to talk about why you weren't in the office.
Right.
You know,
Right.
but when somebody's gone for 6 weeks and they have panic attacks and the doctor put them on meds,
Sure.
you know, they they're thinking, I cannot go back and tell people that.
Right.
You know.
Right.
Yeah.
And I'm just going to kind of bring this back to people going through divorce. You know, if you're a mom going through divorce with kids, and kids are seeing, or a dad, and seeing you reaching out for help and getting healthy and learning new techniques and then teaching them to your kids so that they have that resilience, that's a powerful message. You know, rather than seeing mom or dad unable to cope, you know, sobbing at their desk, or, you know, not eating, not caring for themselves, you know, that it's such a positive message to just say to kids, yeah, we all need help sometime, and I'm going to get some, you know, and then doing it.
And that's what you do. And the thing about it is, my three signature points that I talk to people about are expression, outlet, and engagement. Expression is talking about it, writing about it, singing about it, dancing about it, drawing a picture, however you express yourself. There are some forums like coaching, what you do, what I do, where I do a little more of the clinical work, although I don't diagnose people in a coaching setting. I just simply listen to what they're saying. And so there's that, having a helper, somebody trained to listen, versus talking to a good friend of yours, which both of them, by the way, both of those venues can be valuable parts of expression.
Absolutely.
The outlets are the things that allow you to release natural tension, but they also will give you some opportunity to actually reflect on your thoughts and feelings. So, and anything can become an outlet. And actually, what is one person's outlet is not another person's. People explore that, and they develop that way of doing that. The last one is engagement. Knowing how you engage with your thoughts and your feelings, and then understanding how you engage with situations, how you engage with other people, you know. And for some people, one of the things that I do find, and social media could be part of it, technology is definitely part of it, because people are on their phones and on their games and things, they are losing the ability to connect meaningfully with another person. Right. It's almost makes them nervous if they don't have that device there or that tablet.
And
that's a change that you were asking about changes before. That's one that I think is a important one.
Definitely. Yeah. Definitely. So we have covered a ton of information, and I can't believe I say this every single podcast, but I could just keep talking to you for another couple hours. We'd just be chatting away here. And what do you think is one thing you'd like people to keep at the top of their head or in the top of their mind while they're going about the rest of their day?
I think that really noticing yourself. I think that this may sound really simple. It's about, you know, are you taking care of yourself on a physical? Everybody knows that one, you know, your nutrition, taking care so you have what you need, but then also on an emotional level, on a psychological level, on a spiritual level, you know, what does your self-care look like on a social level? There's social self-care. And then the last one is professional self-care. You know, are you able to adequately assess your level of self-care? And I have an assessment for everybody. If they would like to contact me, they can contact me on LinkedIn, and we can put that information
into the chat.
Yeah. And I will send you a self-care assessment. And what I like about it is that it not only defines the five areas of self-care, but it also allows you to assess how you do it. So you can pick one a week and say, this week I'm going to focus on this one and ramp up my ability to practice self-care. And of course, that foundation makes a difference in how you see all the other things.
Yeah.
Your work, your relationship, and your parenting. You know, we've been talking about parenting. it really does make a difference. And it is kind of that principle of when the mask comes down on the plane, you put it on yourself first.
Right. Yeah.
You know, because when you are well and you are functioning and you are at your best, you are going to take what you already bring, the gifts that you already bring to work and your family and your children. You're going to take that and it's going to be magnified because
Absolutely.
You're well.
Yeah. So, Anne, thank you for that. That's a wonderful gift. I'm going to encourage everybody to go grab it. And I said chat. I don't mean chat. I meant show notes. It's down here at the bottom. At the bottom of the screen. So it'll all be in there. And if people do want to reach out and follow you, listen to your words of wisdom, find out more about you, what's the best way to go about that?
They can contact me on LinkedIn. Okay. And it is, it's Anne Greco Success Genie. So it's easy to, somebody told me to put that in the profile so that it's easy. Not that I'm a genie, but I don't have those roots. But so they can contact me that way if they would like to. And in there, you can pick up a free gift that I have. It's about 10 tips for stress management. And then you can also even book a conversation just in case anybody has questions or they'd like to just have a quick 30-minute conversation. I always like to get on the phone with people and meet them.
So. Wonderful. Thank you so much, Anne. You've given us a wealth of information, and thank you for all those gifts. And I want to thank everybody for listening in, and we'll talk to you again next week. Thanks for listening and supporting the D-Shift podcast. If you would like to attend live trainings by our amazing guests and have a chance to ask questions and get answers from our experts, join the D-Shift crew. For more details and to sign up, head on over to www.divorcecoachforwomen and click on the podcast page.